Virginia is awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name's Joey Weaver. He's Mike McDaniel. Mike, it is championship game weekend in the ACC. How you doing? You ready to go?
Usually it's Scott here to tell us that we have to hit record and stop vamping. You and I just had a great conversation pre-show. And you know that scene in Big Daddy where I forget her name, but she's like, we wasted the good surprise on you. I was thinking the entire time, like, yeah, we're wasting the good content just, you know, in the pre-show. So we got to make sure we hit record to get some of it on record.
First time that's ever happened in this show is that we have good conversations before hitting the button, which, you know, we've only been doing this show for about 10 years now. We'll probably figure this out at some point, Mike. I had to imagine.
Yeah, it included some questions about chick flicks I've seen from your wife, which was we went through quite a list. She asked me if I had seen The Notebook, to which I responded yes, and then realized that I had not seen The Notebook. I'd actually seen A Walk to Remember, which is very different.
And if all this sounds like it came out of a fever dream, trust us that it did not. And you should subscribe to the upcoming Discord that producer Scott is going to announce.
Okay. Well, that's good. I think you just announced it. In fact, there's going to be a Discord for this podcast.
Theoretically
for people who are interested in, you know, talking to us outside of just in the comments on the show. And the interesting part about that Discord right now is that Scott is still putting it together, and right now the only people in it are Scott and Joey. Like, if you asked me for a link, right, if you were like, oh, I want to get early access to it, I would not be able to give it to you because I can't find it.
Mike, we're live, youtube.com/@the ACC Football Podcast. It is about midnight on the East Coast, Wednesday, December the 3rd, or now I guess Thursday, December the 4th.
Happy birthday to my wife, my lovely wife, yeah. Caitlin.
Shout out to Mike's bride. Happy birthday to her. Officially. Yeah, we're, you know, trying to fit this in as schedules allow this week, which is a bit of a, you know, a discussion. But here we are. We got people in the chat with us either way, and we got great people. We're appreciative of them. They are welcome. Everyone doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us late on a Thursday morning, early on a Thursday morning, late on a Thursday
fresh
night,
Wednesday. Fresh back from trivia and, you know, doing great, Mike, doing great.
Went to Hibachi tonight and had a couple of Sapporo, so I'm ready to rock.
There you go. Ready to rock. There we are. YouTube.com/@the ACC Football Podcast. Please hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Please hit the like button. Hit the bell icon. You'll be notified when we're going to go live next. We'll be live at some point this weekend, I would imagine, recapping the ACC championship game, which we are here to discuss tonight, Mike. What do we think? Sunday night, probably, for the recap there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it'd be on schedule with what we've been doing this week.
And this year also.
We're going to preview the ACC championship game. We've got some other newsworthy items, especially particularly related to head coaching news in the conference. A lot of changes / aggressive non-changes in the conference here over the last several days. So we will get into that here in a little bit. Once again, youtube.com/@the ACC Football Podcast. Please hit the subscribe button if you have not already. We would really, really appreciate that. Anything before we get into a rowback look back at week 14?
No, we're good. By the way, if you're worried whether or not we'll have sickos, don't worry anymore.
You'll be as surprised as I am. Trust me. Rowback look back at week 14. I don't have a ton. We kind of alluded to it on the recap that things are amiss in the Bay Area, Mike. Tavita Prichard hired as head coach at Stanford. A couple of thoughts here. First of all, a lot of the national sentiment was, oh, this is Andrew Luck's backup from when he was at Stanford, and he was at Stanford under David Shaw, and even I think to some degree under John not John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, earlier in the 2010s, like, oh, this is Andrew Luck running it back. But like last couple of years, he's been the quarterback's coach for the Commanders under Cliff Kingsbury, if I'm not mistaken. I can kind of see the thought process, because this is a guy who is a Stanford lifer. He played there. He coached there for a long time. He understands the institution. He has a lot of connections basically within that whole structure, basically of the athletic department, the boosters, all that. I think Stanford's still in a little bit of a place of like, how badly are we going to commit to trying to win at football and all the things that that entails. But the more that I look about it and the more that I think about it, I think I understand what they're trying to do with this hire. It's not just a pure like Andrew Luck nepotism situation of like the guy that he knows. So sure, let's try it.
I think you have to go with a familiarity with the program hire here. They just had a non-familiarity hire that went poorly. Like, they thought they were thinking outside the box with Troy Taylor. I actually liked it when they hired him. That was fine. He was, yeah.
Okay. When Stanford, all right. Just when, not Pritchard. Just clarifying.
No. Yeah. Yeah. When they hired Troy Taylor initially, yeah. Right? I liked it. Right. It was an outside the box hire from Sacramento State, and it didn't work for. It was starting to not work for football reasons, but it was obviously not working for off the field stuff. So then they overhaul everything, right? I mean, they, prior to Troy Taylor being fired, Andrew Luck's the GM, and it's a professional model where the GM oversees essentially football ops, right? Not the other way around, where, you know, the GM reports to the head coach, which we see at other places. This was a situation where they overhauled the way that football was going to be run at Stanford. Cal is doing the same thing. It's happening at both Bay Area schools. But I think for Stanford to go back to Pritchard, I think it's Andrew Luck, right, acknowledging that, hey, this guy is a Stanford lifer. He's played here. He's coached here extensively. Like, by the way, he has not been a coach at the NFL level for too long. Like, he was at Stanford for a while up until like a few years ago. He's got familiarity. He's coached in college recently. He's young enough to relate to the players. He's very well thought of. He was well thought of as a assistant at Stanford, but he's well thought of at the professional level as well for his ability to develop quarterbacks. And Stanford needs all of that. Like, they need a guy that can come in, that can relate to the players, that knows the school, right, and can relate to the past while also embracing the new era. He's young enough to, you know, embrace everything that's coming down the pike here with NIL and rev sharing and how Stanford wants to run things as a football program now moving forward. He is good friends with Andrew Luck. Like, everybody's, like, talking about that. That's a thing, right? Like, I don't want to just, like, toss that by the wayside, like,
He was Andrew's backup there.
Yeah, like, they were teammates. Luck took the starting job from him. Like, the
Andrew did, yeah.
Yeah, like, they are friends. And there's a lot of mutual respect there. And there's a familiarity. And I think what can't be understated here, or overstated, one of the two, somebody in the chat let me know the correct phrasing of that. I think it's overstated. What can't be overstated, that makes more sense. What can't be overstated is that there is going to be instant cohesion between general manager and head coach, which that has to work, especially in situations where the general manager is the one making the football decisions instead of the athletic director. You know, like, we're seeing that at a handful of schools across the country. In most cases, I would say it's the GM reporting into the head coach. Cal and Stanford have taken the opposite stance. There's going to be a lot of cohesion here. I think it's going to work well. And whether or not that leads to results on the field, we'll see. But I think it's going to work in terms of getting this program off on the right foot, in this new era of college athletics. So yeah. I do like the hire a lot. And I mentioned that in passing, you know, on the recap we did the other night, but yeah, I think it's a very good hire for Stanford considering we didn't hear much of anything for a while. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's Peter Pritchard. Okay.
It was a name completely out of the blue. And like, I would be lying if I said that I didn't have to Google who is Tavita Pritchard when I found out that he was being hired. But I see the thinking. And the other thing I have to mention is that we've had a commenter on here, Stanford Football Updates, who I've done a little bit of messaging with. And I think the idea here is, this is a young alumnus who understands how the program works, who can develop quarterbacks. And by the way, the Stanford program, you can go back a long way and see a pretty healthy lineage of quarterbacks being developed, right? You have John Elway, you have Andrew Luck, you have Tanner McKee, KJ Costello, Davis Mills. Like, you've had a number of quite good, at least college level quarterbacks here, where you can get guys in here, and if you get them the right coaching, and Pritchard kind of understood as a quarterback whisperer of sorts, maybe that's a formula that works. Now, this is also something that we've talked about on this podcast before, where this is a first time head coach, and Pritchard, I think, has some experience as an offensive coordinator under David Shaw, but like, I don't think he was even calling the plays. Like, I think that was a Shaw thing specifically. So, and again, I want to give credit to Stanford Football Updates, who understands this program pretty well inside and out, as I understand it, made the point that this is going to pretty heavily come down to who are the coordinators that are hired.
Yeah.
And similar to Tony Elliott, similar to Jeff Collins, some of these like really inexperienced head coaches that we've talked about in this league over the last 5-7 years, you need to bring in coordinators who are seasoned and know what they're doing, because I don't know that he's going to be in the position and have the experience to step in and correct things where they're not going right with coordinators, as somebody, you know, again, Pritchard has never been a head coach before. So let's watch and see how he fills out the rest of his staff, and let's see what they do in, you know, somewhat in the transfer portal, somewhat in recruiting. Like, again, Stanford, kind of a tricky place from a recruiting talent acquisition kind of standpoint. But I think for the time being, you know, when I first heard this, I was like, who? And now it's like, I kind of see the thought. I'm not positive it's going to work. I'm not positive it's going to fail either. I'm kind of just curious to see where we end up.
I am too. I think it'll be good. I feel the same way about this I felt about Troy Taylor at the time. And I got to caveat it by saying it's a different era, right? NIL, yeah. Things are different than when Troy Taylor was hired. I feel the same way. I think this is a good one, but it's hard to forecast football at a school like Stanford right now.
Yeah, totally. Truthfully, like, thinking back on it, I was actually pretty confident in the Troy Taylor hire, feeling like he had done really well at Sacramento State. It's in the area. It's maybe a job where it doesn't totally rely on having more talent than whoever you play. Like, he was coaching up the guys that he could get. Felt like that would translate well to Stanford. It didn't on the field, and it certainly didn't off the field. But who knows, Mike? Who knows? Like, with any of these things, who knows?
Yeah. Guess we'll find out.
We will. Tavita Pritchard, we will see how all that goes for Stanford in the coming days. Anything else on week 14? Before we jump into a preview of the ACC championship game,
let's do the preview.
Well, Mike, we can't do the preview just yet. We got to recap last week's locks.
Oh, good. You're right.
Regrettably, trust me. Don't worry.
Okay. Very good.
We can actually start with you, and you made out okay last week. You had four locks.
Did okay.
Yeah, you did. You did. Hold on, let me set the sounds here. You had Kentucky plus the 2.5 against Louisville.
That went well.
Yeah, close. No cigar. Clemson, South Carolina under 46.5. You had Florida minus 1.5 against Florida State.
Easy money.
That's right. And NC State, North Carolina under 48.5. Totally saw that thing. You know, didn't get there.
That was very close.
2-2 on the week, 13-25 on the year. I had Kentucky plus the 2.5 against Louisville. Florida minus the 1.5 against Florida State. And SMU minus 13.5 against Cal. Yeah, they lost on the field. Yeah, tough scene. 14-19 on the year for your boy in locks of the week. And finally, producer's pick of the week. Scott had 9 picks, Mike. I'm not going to go through all of them. Let's just say that he went, I think, 4-5 on those 9 picks. He's 14-23, which puts him squarely in the middle of us.
He did not go 8-1 like he needed to.
not quite. Scott, 14-23 on the year after 9 picks last week. That, again, honestly, impressively good for that many picks.
Yep.
That's all I got on week 14. You want to talk championship week?
Championship week. Let's do it. And for the people in the chat clamoring, wondering when we're going to talk about other coaching news, we are discussing several topics here after this recap. We're already recapping the game.
Absolutely.
Let's do the recap now.
Yeah, absolutely. We honestly maybe could. Let's do it. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, ABC, number 17, Virginia, taking on the Duke Blue Devils. Virginia, a 3.5-point favorite in this game, totals 57.5. First of all, this spread is noteworthy considering they played this game like 3 weeks ago and Virginia won handily. And if you just look at the final score, that doesn't even tell the full story because Virginia was up a lot more than that. I think they were up 28 points at the end of the third quarter.
Yep.
Does that give you pause, Mike, as you look at this game now 3 weeks later for the conference championship game, like 3.5?
Duke plus 3.5. Lock it up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, goodness. Here we go.
You better lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up.
Please. I think UVA wins the game and sends the ACC to the college football playoff. So let me get that out of the way first before UVA fans get real mad at me for taking Duke plus 3.5. Let's just get that out of the way. It is hard, Joey, to pause. It is hard. It's difficult to beat the same team twice in a season. It's even more difficult. I mean, I think back to the COVID year, right? Notre Dame, again, different circumstances. Trevor Lawrence was, he had COVID the first meeting against Notre Dame in South Bend. But remember that DJU game where he kind of popped off in South Bend and Notre Dame beat Clemson in like October. And then they played that game and they played, you know, 6 weeks later, and then Clemson kind of beat that ass.
Smothered him. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just one example. But point being, it's very hard to beat the same team twice in a season, let alone handily. Virginia did handle Duke in the first matchup. 34-17 final. It was 31-3 after three quarters. The game was pretty much over. But then you return, right, to the conference title game. Look at the spread. That was November 15th, by the way. They're going to play this game on December the, do the math, 6th. And it is a 3.5-point spread, which I think speaks to the fact that it is hard to beat the same team twice, but not only that, to beat the same team twice in a three-week span, which is what Virginia is going to try to do here. for pure football reasons, Virginia has been the better and more consistent team. So that's why I think that they will win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to lay 3.5 with any sort of confidence, given number one, the way Duke's looked the past couple of weeks, but number two, just the fact that these are college kids who are going to look at a game plan that's very similar to the one that was just installed a few weeks ago, think they have a really good handle on it. And then in Virginia's case, are they just going to cruise like they did before? I don't know. I mean, maybe, but I think Duke keeps it close here, gives them all they can handle. I think Virginia wins very, very close in a competitive ACC title game that everybody will be locked into, certainly.
Your point about beating the same team twice in a year, I get it. I completely get it. And it's been the biggest thing weighing on my mind the last couple of days, thinking about how am I going to predict this game to go. My biggest issue thinking about this, I cannot bring myself to pick Duke with this small of a spread. I can't do it. And the reasons are, number one, looking at the games that Duke has played, I mean, I guess you'd say that maybe the best game they played was against Clemson in Death Valley, but that's a very flawed, you know, bit of a shell of a Clemson team from what we know of them. I have questions about that. Maybe a good performance last week against Wake, like, you know, winning that game by 17 points. But Duke at 7-5. I mean, you start looking at the games that they've won, you start having to kind of convince yourself a little bit of the quality of the teams that they played and the games that they played. Like, and we've seen how many times, Mike, this year that Duke goes into these games and, like, will, you know, come up with more yards than the team that they're playing, and they have better yards per play, but they're also like -3 in turnovers because they're just kind of a sloppy team and they can't hold it together for four quarters and, you know, avoid the mistakes. Meanwhile, Virginia, as we said last week, kind of peaking at the right time. Like, they're playing well. I think everything is gelling. I just don't think this Duke team, I don't anticipate that this Duke team is going to go into this stadium a few weeks later and put it all together for four quarters and flip the script on Virginia and win the game. And, you know, to your point, you have Duke plus the 3.5, like, keep it close. I don't trust them. Like, I don't trust them. They're a little bit of a mess. They find their way into making mistakes that they don't have to. And I think Virginia wins this game. Some of this probably wish casting. For my own personal investment in the ACC's national reputation, I need the ACC to get a team into the playoff. And the really surefire way for that to happen is for Virginia to win this game. So I'm going to predict that. But also, again, I think Virginia is playing its best ball of the year. And I've seen Duke play one pretty good game a week ago. And otherwise, I don't have any reason to believe that they're going to avoid the mistakes that they need to avoid to win this game over four quarters. So I guess I'll lay the small number, 3.5, with Virginia.
You talk about being invested and, like, we have to have an ACC team in the playoff. But imagine the content on this podcast if Duke pulls this off. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
But I can't wait for the recap. The content will write itself, Joey.
Yeah.
Think of it that way.
It sure will. It sure will. You know, we had people before we hit the button to go live on Monday, I guess it was, for the recap. We had people lining up in the comments saying, I can't wait to hear Joey's rant. People want to be mad about this conference. People who have teams in this conference, who love this conference, but like, they get it. We get it. It is what it is. Like,
we have a Discord of people who get it.
Theoretically.
Maybe.
We will soon.
I'm not probably. In it. I mean, I'm not in it, but.
In theory, who knows? Ask producer Scott how all that works.
Scott's going to listen to this. He's just going to be screaming at. He's going to be watching this video just angry.
Total 57.5. I don't know. Over, maybe?
Sure. Over. Yeah. Fine.
Virginia's defense been playing well the last couple weeks, too. Like,
I mean, Kyle, they have been. But is there a chance that, well, no, I can't say that on this, but I can't say that. I'll get us in trouble. Virginia Tech's offense is bad. I was going to say something about Virginia Tech's quarterback being on the spectrum potentially would have been a problem. It was going to be a bit more explicit than that. You know? I think you know where we're going. I didn't want to say that. But I mean,
how could you?
He totally forgot how to throw a football from like, I don't know, year two of Brent Pry to this year. He just totally forgot how to complete a forward pass.
Oh, you're talking about Virginia Tech's quarterback.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, because Virginia's quarterback is trying to find another year to run it back one more time, as we found out, I think, today.
Yeah, he's trying to go full Diego Pavia, who was tweeting at the president of the United States asking for an executive order to play another year. And I saw, after the show, remind me.
So, do you want evidence that we're living in a simulation? We've got Vanderbilt's quarterback asking the president of the United States to put in an injunction requiring them to give him a ninth year of eligibility or whatever the hell. Like, good Lord, what is happening?
We had Marco Rubio asking Trump to intervene with the College Football Playoff Committee if Miami's left out. And then I saw somebody tweet that Trump actually played golf with Notre Dame athletic director Pete Bivacqua like a couple months ago, which is really funny. So,
and some guy named Jack Swarbrick, I'm sure, was probably there too.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
On that note, I've got Virginia minus 3.5. Mike has Duke plus 3.5 locked up
in for some game, reason.
Better than you, better you than me. Total 57.5. I'm going to say over, but I don't have a lot of confidence either way in how either of these teams are going to do in this game. So like this, for me, this is a sit back and watch and just see what happens kind of situation.
That's no fun. What would you,
I never said I was fun.
What would you say that there is a total that benefits one team over the other in terms of the over under spread? Because I don't really have a good feel. I feel like this game could be won by either team on either side of that total. I could see it pretty easily.
I kind of agree. And a lot of that to me has to do with my idea of Duke, because they like, the offense, the way that they play and their ability to throw the ball around and spread it out and all that, like they're more than happy to play a high scoring game, and their defense is leaky and will give up big plays and will make mistakes and all that. But also like they are aggressive and can create negative plays and can stall out drives and all that. Like, meanwhile, with Virginia, their defense has been playing well. They can create a low-scoring game and play kind of conservative on offense. If you want to play a shootout kind of game, they can do that too. Like, I think offense, defense, both of these teams, I can see it kind of going any different direction. So that's, you know, to answer your question, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I can kind of see it going any way with this game. That's where I'm, again, I'm just,
yeah,
I want to watch and see.
I feel that way too. I'm seeing a couple comments in chat, like Duke needs it. And Dennis 133, Duke needs the over. Will Secor under definitely helps Virginia.
you know, I think like greater than 50% of outcomes, yes. But, you know, plenty of outcomes where I think Duke could win a low scoring game, you know, 27-17 or something like that, you know, like could absolutely see that happening. But yeah, no, I see it. I get it.
Me too.
So, all right. Virginia and the over for me. Did you say over or under, Mike?
I'll just go with the over.
Sure, over. And Duke plus the 3.5 locked up for the ACC championship game. 8 o'clock, ABC, in front of God and everyone, just as everyone was hoping for. It would be number 17, Virginia, and 7-5, Duke.
Hey, Joey.
Sup,
Mike? Give me some music.
Oh, no. Hold on. Okay. Here we go.
I don't care. I'm a sickness. There it is.
Well, my headphones falling off wasn't what I planned, but, you know.
Look good. That'll be good on video.
Good visual. Yeah, that's fine.
I came back from headbanging there and looked up, and you had your hood on and headphones off. And there it goes.
There we go. All right.
Look like Slim Shady.
Thank you.
That's what I've always said about you. If Slim Shady lived in Houston and was a Georgia Tech fan, graduated from the engineering school, wearing a coach hoodie. Beautiful.
I hit your music, Mike. What you got?
I have a couple for you this week.
Hit me.
All right. Let's go to the Mac. Hope everybody enjoyed their weeknight action over the past month. I know I have. Let me adjust the banner real quick for us. Professional production this evening with no Scott. There it is.
We're all doing our best.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Miami, Ohio is taking on Western Michigan. Buddy, first one to like 13 wins this game. Not a lot of scoring here. Not a lot of scoring. Total is 43.5. I think that's way too high. Give me under 43.5. Miami, Ohio, and Western Michigan. Joey, can I interest you in some FCS action? We're in the playoffs, after all.
Hell yeah.
Beautiful. Joey, I have a question for you. Did you know that this year is the first time that the Ivy League is allowing their teams to participate in the FCS playoffs? Were you aware of that?
I had heard this.
Okay.
And what I had heard was that Yale was getting their asses handed to them in the first half last week and then came back and won.
That's correct. Can't say the same about Harvard, though. Harvard got absolutely dogged by Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, Crimson. Yeah, speaking of Yale, they're taking on Montana State. By the way, Joey, Montana State, really freaking good. Really freaking good. Congrats to Yale on their first
three.
Yeah. This spread reflects it, by the way. Congrats to Yale on a great season. Montana is a 28.5 point favorite. Yale will not win this football game. But the one thing I am confident in saying is that Yale will score enough points with the help of Montana State winning in a blowout to push this game over 55.5. Give me Yale, Montana State over 55.5. Two good offenses. I think Montana State's going to win in a blowout, but I think Yale can at least get 14-17 points on the board. And I think this sails over if that's the case.
Because
I think Montana State has a great chance to cover. So give me, if you want to bet a spread in an FCS second round playoff game, I guess give me Montana State minus 28.5. But for purposes of the Sickos picks, give me over 55.5 for sure.
There you go. There you go. I don't know that we did we get entries from Scott or Cam this week?
Oh, we got entries from We got entry from Scott.
Oh dear. Oh boy. Need a second, or you got him?
Give me I have the picks pulled up, but I live in the state of Virginia, so his first pick I do not have. Okay, perfect. We're good. We're good. I'm ready.
All right, go for it.
Okay. Scott's joining me on the under in the MAC title game, Western Michigan, Miami, go. Ohio, under 43 right. and a half. So do we have double barrel sound? Do you have that available to you?
Ooh, hang on. Hold on. Hold on.
Do you have that?
Double barrel.
You do have that available. Beautiful. We love that.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott's let's go to the Sun Belt. Sun Belt championship game could have plenty of college football playoff implications.
Oh, sorry. Anyways.
Sorry. Troy is taking on James Madison.
Oh, right. I don't know.
Yeah. James Madison's a 23.5 point favorite. And again, nobody has discussed this, but wouldn't it be hilarious if Duke won the ACC title and Troy found a way to upset James Madison as a 23.5 point underdog, thus sending Duke to the college football playoff. Nobody's discussing it. Everybody's just saying, oh, James Madison, Bob Chesney, who's already going, you know, got one foot out the door to UCLA. Oh, they're just going to walk all over Troy. Nobody's talking about it. But wouldn't it be hilarious? Related, Scott's got Troy plus 23.5 against James Madison in the Sun Belt title game. That's in Harrisonburg, by the way. That is a home game for James Madison. So important to note in the Sun Belt, that's not a neutral site. That is a home game for James Madison. So
23.5 point road dog.
And Scott, much like me, also likes the FCS, it turns out. Who doesn't? Who doesn't? We consume all levels of the sport here. Villanova's taking on Lehigh. I took a look at this as well. Villanova's catching 4.5 after beating the brakes off Harvard in the first round. Villanova plus 4.5 for Mr. Savino. And then finally, the wagon. That's not quite the wagon it used to be. Chris Kleiman retired today, by the way. Did you see that?
He did, yeah.
That's related.
And I quickly saw some stuff about Kansas State is thinking about Colin Klein, and then Kansas State has tabbed Colin Klein. I was like, wait, is he hired, or are we just like going after Colin Klein? Like,
I think the official, in the words of my SI colleague, Brian Fisher, who broke this, broke it around the same time as everybody else did. He said he's the target, to which some people said he's hired. Some people said he's the target without a doubt. I think it's going to be Colin Klein at Kansas State.
Makes so much sense on so many levels.
Can we just be
specific about the words that we're using here and what they mean is all I'm asking.
I agree. Using a target, saying he's the target is a good way to like get around the if something happens and something falls through. It's a good way to.
Right.
Anyway, related, Chris Kleiman used to coach North Dakota State. They are a 23.5 point favorite against Illinois State. And Scott said, give me all those points. He's laying them with the Bison.
Okay. Wait, he's laying them. He's laying them.
He's laying them.
NDSU said minus 23.5.
That's right.
Fair enough. All right, I've got two.
Okay.
We're going I think I've been to this well before for pick number one, but we'll find out. Let's go to the blue turf.
There's no South Alabama this week for you, unfortunately. Just one.
Yeah, I can't support the troops, USA, all that. Sorry. But Let's go to the Blue Turf. Albertsons Stadium in Boise, Idaho, where the 8-4 Boise State Broncos are a 4.5 point home favorite against Dan Mullen and the fighting UNLV Rebels. Mike, I think wrong team's favored here. Give me UNLV plus a 4.5 on the road on the Blue Turf.
Good pick.
In the Mountain West Championship game. The biggest thing that could derail this is Dan Mullen getting another job between now and Friday night, which not off the table. And we'll get into some of that here in just a few minutes. But UNLV, good team, has some issues on defense. I don't think that's necessarily a huge problem playing a Boise State team that is trying to find its way post Ashton Jeanty and having a time of it. So I think UNLV might win this game on the field, but give me the plus, give me the 4.5 with the running Rebels.
I have a question for Will Secor.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Troy team total number?
Ooh. Let's do some implied score math. Oh, goodness gracious. 47.5 is the total, 23.5 on the spread.
It's low.
Ooh, buddy. What is the, like 35 to 12? Something like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be around 12.5.
Is Troy going to play a conference championship game and score like 12 points? Yikes. We're just asking questions here, Mike. Yikes.
I mean, I'd lean under there.
That's a good thought. Good thought.
Yeah.
Can't do it myself.
I made all those jokes about, you know, wouldn't it be hilarious if Troy beat James? They're not going to beat James Madison. I don't think we need to worry about that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. UNLV plus the 4.5 for me. And let's go back to the actual well, Mike. Our boys, the Tennessee State Owls, are they're not on the road. They're in Jacksonville. No, they are on the road in Jacksonville, Alabama. Kennesaw State, a 2.5 point favorite on the road. Lamb with the Owls. Owls going to be 10-3 going into bowl season. Lamb with Kennesaw State. Jacksonville State, good, not good enough to beat Kennesaw State here, even at home.
I like the pick.
Thank you.
I like the pick. Jerry Mack is going to get himself a big time job here shortly, I think.
Sure will. Sure will. Those are your sickest picks of the week. Mike, MAC championship game under 43.5. Yale, Montana State over 55.5. Scott, MAC championship game under 43.5. Troy plus 23.5 at James Madison, and Villanova plus 4.5. And also North Dakota State minus 23.5. And finally, I have UNLV plus 4.5 and Kennesaw State minus 2.5. And we are wildly irresponsible podcast hosts and also just bad friends, and did not solicit picks from Cam this week. So whatever Cam would have picked, they're probably all right, if I had to guess.
They're probably all right.
Probably all right.
Hey, my SMU under 8.5 went to Old Ticket game home last week. Did I mention that?
I didn't have the full time to grade all of the picks from last week, but truthfully, they went really, really well last week. I think both Scott and I were shot the moon and were like 3-0, 4-0 each on those picks. I think you were a winner last week, Mike. Like,
yeah,
Sicko's picks of the week went really well last week.
Well, I was looking at my account as I just locked in my two Sicko's picks. And I was wondering why I had more money than I expected to have in there. Navy over 8.5 wins came home. My Michigan under 9.5 win total came home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I just mentioned, SMU under 8.5 came home unexpectedly. Little did I know that SMU blowing it against Cal was going to win me a win total bet. I would have been much more invested in that if I had remembered that I placed it.
Forgot the profitability impacts there.
Yes. Yes. Which is weird. But
I do want to call out our guy, Will Secor, who agrees with me that UNLV over Boise, really, really good pick. But also points out that UNLV lost to Boise 56-31
by a billion, yeah,
about 6 weeks ago. So but this time I'm sure it won't be a problem. So good call, Will. Thank you for making sure to bring that up.
Surely right. They'll play better this time around.
They will. They will. Is happening here. All right. Are we good on Sicko's picks of the week?
We're good on Sicko's. Let's talk about news. We got news items here.
Let's do some news. I don't have banners for this on StreamYard.
That's fine.
We got a lot of coach news / non-news, I guess we'll say. Let's start with Cal. Cal fired JJ Wilcox there a couple weeks ago. They have not officially announced a hiring as of this moment, as far as I'm aware. Ron Rivera seems heavily involved in running that search. But the odds I saw this afternoon had Tosh Lupoi at 1-5 to get this job, i.e. if it's not Lupoi, it'll be a surprise to everyone.
It's a wrap, fam.
This is a name I feel like I've seen, Mike, for 10 years for various jobs, college, NFL, SEC, Pac-12, you know, like just all over the place. And often treated with a lot of respect, but at times like, what's the actual track record here for Tosh Lupoi? I don't know. Like, again, weird time, weird situation at Cal. Ron Rivera, again, running the scenario here. And
another alum.
Yeah. Maybe it's him. Maybe there's an off chance it's somebody else. But how would you feel, Tosh Lupoi, head coach at Cal?
I think he's a good coordinator. I am more bullish on Stanford's football program than Cal's as a whole. So I think that's part of my reservations here. It's less about Pritchard versus Tosh Lupoi. It's more of like, are we sure Cal is going to invest in football the way Stanford is? They claim they are. But
I was going to say, why Stanford over Cal? But if it's an investment thing, again, like words don't do as much as actions do, obviously, in anything in life. But Stanford seems a little bit more sincere in actually putting money into the football program and committed to the football program versus Cal trying to say the right things without necessarily showing us that they're actually backing them up yet, if I'm reading that right.
Yeah, and Cal's been better the last, like, 5 years. For sure. Mm-hmm. It had the better program. Will Secor. Mike would follow General Andrew Luck into battle. Yes, yes, I would. Yeah, I don't know. I feel okay about it. I think it's fine. I do agree with you, though. It's almost like everybody is so high on Tosh Lupoi. And again, it's like, are we sure?
Like, I want to say he was like the Falcons defensive line coach for a year or two. He was, I think, Saban's defensive line coach for a couple of years. Like, he's been associated with some really good staffs, but the trajectory of his career has not screamed to me like rising star in the coaching industry kind of thing. Like, it's good name who kind of has some good position level results to him, but I don't know. It's probably not that different of a situation from Stanford, where it is valuable to have somebody in the door who understands the program and has been there and, you know, kind of understands the machinations and the people involved and like all that stuff. But
it's the pedigree, the fact that he's coached under Saban and now he's coached for Lanning. And
I don't know that I've ever heard the name Tosh Lapoy associated with a head coaching job other than this one. What does that tell us?
He's always on a list for like a random SEC job. And you're like, there's no way they're even going to get that. They got to go down like seven names before they get to him. It would have to be like a Penn State search.
And just in all fairness, I also hadn't heard Tavita Pritchard's name associated with any head coaching job before this one that he just got. So, you know, whatever, you know, confidence we have in either one of them. I mean, again, welcome back to the coaching carousel where who the hell knows? Like, I don't know. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. We'll find out.
Yeah, I agree.
Good on there.
I think it's a fine hire. Should be fine.
My favorite coach in the ACC, Mike, confirmed will be back next year. That's Dave Doran at NC State.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brent Key.
No. My favorite coach in the ACC is Dave Doran. Everyone knows this. If you've listened to this podcast for long enough.
I, for one, have never told you otherwise.
Yeah, Dave's coming back next year. And in the press conference and announcing it, he immediately started ripping on podcasts and, you know, just airing of the grievances. We're a couple of weeks short of that, Dave. So just hold on.
Yes.
Until yes, what, like was... December 23rd, maybe we can do Festivus and all that. And then,
yes, it was certainly the podcaster's fault that you lost to Virginia Tech on your home field, for example.
Right. Right. I don't know whose fault it is that you beat Virginia in a non-conference game. There's probably a whole podcast we could do about that, but
which it's not this ACC podcast fault. It's somebody else.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Dave Doran will be back at NC State next year. And truthfully and genuinely, like, I don't get the sense that this is the coaching search and the coaching carousel time frame that NC State really wanted to be involved in.
With it turns out Penn State doesn't want to be involved in it either. It turns out.
Well, yeah. And that's a whole thing is, you know, we're getting close to Christmas, Mike, and Penn State still doesn't have a head coach. And I don't know what they're doing. But I just, I don't know. Let's just hypothetically say that Dave Doran had retired or NC State said, thanks, but no thanks. We're good. We're moving on next year. Like NC State in the picking order is sixth, seventh this year. Something like that. I mean, yeah, I've got a 6 year old. I'm doing the 6-7 thing. It's, you know,
you're out there looking like Hunter Yurecek.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, as an ACC program, like there's never a good year to be like, you know, trying to be the top dog in the coaching search, I would say. But like this year in particular with Florida, LSU, Auburn, Penn State, you know, all these relative blue blood programs searching for coaches. I don't think this was the year that NC State was going to really make the move and, you know, try to move on, if that makes sense.
I agree. I mean, they would have been down the list a bit. Doesn't mean they couldn't have gotten a good coach, but you got to be sure he's going to be better than Dave Doran.
Which, you know, we make jokes about, but you can do a lot worse than 6-6, 7-5 as a relative floor. Just looking at the balance of your results over the last 12 years or whatever it's been, you know, like
with a rising junior quarterback, a team that always has playmakers on offense, you clean up the defense, you know?
Yep. I mean, yeah. How much would it take for NC State to win 9 or 10 games next year? Like it's not crazy. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening in Raleigh, but it will be Dave Doran there running the program for another 12 months. And, you know, we'll see what happens after that.
Yep.
Contract extensions in the ACC. We got one a couple weeks ago. I don't know that we really mentioned this on the show. Rhett Lashley extended with SMU. SMU seemed pretty hellbent on displaying in public that you will not be money whipping SMU to get their coach out of there.
It's nice to have really rich donors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and remember the thing that I don't know that we've mentioned much since it happened on this show is SMU was the program that said, you know what? We don't need your TV payouts for the first however the hell many years, like 5, 7 years, whatever it was. Like, we'll cover that ourselves because SMU has people with deep pockets, lots of them. And, you know, we'll see what the price of oil does in the next 12 months, but I don't think they're worried, Mike.
Keep an eye on those barrels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Rhett Lashley remaining there. And by the way, that's SMU playing defense against Arkansas, where Rhett Lashley played. That's them playing defense against Auburn, where he was previously an offensive coordinator under Gus Malzahn.
Yep.
And you could say potentially maybe like a Miami, but I don't think Mario's leaving there, and that was probably never a thing. But certainly two programs out there that have deep pockets, SEC pockets, and may well have been going to try to make a run at Rhett Lashley, and SMU said nope.
Good for them. And then they promptly went out and lost to Cal. So,
yeah. Well, you know, could be worse.
Return on investment. I mean, return on investment for me. It wasn't return on investment for SMU, their fans.
This is why you should listen to the, you know, preseason win totals pod.
Correct.
Last couple here, Mike. Brent Key. Today, this is like 12, however many hours ago. I don't know what time it is.
Penn State's getting everybody paid, Joey. Everybody paid.
That's right. Brent Key, 5-year extension. He'll be at Georgia Tech through 2030, or being, you know, paid by Georgia Tech through 2030. A little bit amusing to me. And by the way, let's say that. Also, Jeff Brohm extended or about to be extended by Louisville.
Almost done. Yeah.
Both of those came up in the now, what I'm going to say is late stages of the Penn State search, but at this point, maybe we're in the early stages. I don't even know. Like, this has been going on for like a month, and it doesn't seem like we've gotten anywhere. Brent Key, Jeff Brohm, not going to Penn State, but getting some more money to stay where they're at. Brent Key, it's kind of wild, honestly. If you look back, when he got the full-time job after being the interim following the firing of Jeff Collins, what the first time that he got the full-time job, I think he was offered like less than $3 million a year in salary.
Yep.
And that was going into the 2023 season. And now going into 2026, I think he's averaging like $6.5 million a year. Like, this man has proven himself quickly. And there was a lot of discussion around Florida coming after him, Penn State coming after him. I heard very little on the Georgia Tech end of him that were nervous about this. Like, it sounds like Brent Key wants to be in Atlanta just the way that we've said that he does. And I kind of think that Jeff Brohm is the same way in Louisville. I don't think that either of these guys are leaving for anything short of like a top 5 to 7 job that's going to pay him just buku bucks beyond what their alma maters are trying to pay him.
I agree. Yeah. Pete Thamels, when he did the reporting on the Key extension, mentioned that this has been in the works for weeks. Sports Illustrated, we heard that Penn State had reached out to Key a lot earlier in their search and it went absolutely nowhere. So to your point, like, okay, yeah, Key is hearing from other schools. Okay. That's because he's a good coach. he's going to be hearing from other schools. That's fine. But it sounds like he wanted to get an extension locked up pretty quickly. So,
yep.
These things take time, but he was never leaving. Now, Brohm, like, I don't know that he was interested really in leaving Louisville either. I think it's going to have to take a really, really good opportunity for him to go.
Right.
But if you continuously underwhelm with the portal, they're not underwhelming, but that relative to like what they look like on paper every year, they're just kind of around an 8-win program, which is fine. That's what they are. Do Louisville fans get tired of that eventually? I don't know. But like, could we see Brohm maybe restarting the clock somewhere later on? Maybe, but this is alma mater. So I don't know. Not for a while.
Yeah. I try not to be like too romantic about it, and I try to see the whole thing objectively, but we're at an interesting time, I think, in the sport and with the way that some of these coaches see the opportunities and the jobs. And it's like, I think both of these guys could see it as like, Mike, when you go play College Football 26 and you play a dynasty, what is your goal? Who do you want to be the head coach of?
A blue blood. Eventually.
Which blue blood? The Hokies? You want to make the Hokies a blue blood? Like,
I mean, right now I'm at Wyoming. So let's
make your way.
Go win the Mountain West. You know, I'm just trying to win the Mountain West.
On some level, like, when I have played this game and I played NCAA 14, the goal is I want to be the head coach of my alma mater. I want to win national titles at my alma mater. Like, there is a certain dream scenario there that you're chasing that is related to the school that I have a piece of paper on the wall that has its name on it. Right. Like, right. That's what I think about that. You know, could you pay me a lot of money to go be the head coach somewhere else? Yes, but it's got to be well worth it. And it's got to be like really enticing. You know, if it's only marginally worth it or marginally enticing, I think I'm good. I think I'm at home. Yeah. I'm at the place that I love. I'm living my dream and, you know, all that stuff. So that's, I don't know. I think about that for both Brent Key and Jeff Brohm. I think about it for Kenny Dillingham. I think about it for Kalani Sitake. I think about it for a number of these programs. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt, you know, like, and I've said it before, like, this is where I think this coaching cycle and maybe even some in the future are going to be really weird is you have some of these like mid-power conference programs that have coaches doing really well, but they're at their alma maters and they're not trying to leave.
Right.
So then what?
Yeah. Like, what do you think Penn State's objective was outside of like, we could transition here. Where did we think Penn State's objective was? Like, they fired James Franklin and then they thought they were going to do better. And then the first name we heard was Matt Rhule. And everybody's like, Matt Rhule's a good coach. You're not doing better than James Franklin when you hire Matt Rhule. And Matt Rhule mm-hmm. then got an extension from Nebraska and he said, no, thanks. Then they tried Kurt Cignetti and that was the first coach to get, not counting Rhule, that was the first big coach to get an extension off the Penn State job. Cignetti was never leaving Indiana.
Or whatever. Like, that was a while ago.
Never leaving Indiana. Then Penn State tried to reach out to Marcus Freeman, and that was like, I'm laughing at that opportunity. No, thank you. I have a better job now. Never happening. So then they, like, you go down the list, and they just keep swinging and missing. They thought they could do better than Bob Chesney. So Bob Chesney says, okay. And he just went to take the UCLA job. By the way, the UCLA Penn State games, you thought they were fun this year. Wait until Bob Chesney gets a full hold of that UCLA job. And we'll see how those games go.
That's the craziest thing is Penn State could have gone to Bob Chesney and been done with this a month ago. Like,
yeah.
And none of us would have been clowning on him for it. Like, that would have made all sorts of sense. And
right.
Felt like a Kurt Cignetti high upside level kind of higher.
Yep. But instead, Penn State finally pivoted to BYU coach Kalani Sitake. By the way, he is a Jimmy Sexton client. That's notable because James Franklin also a Jimmy Sexton client. the thing that was funny about that is Penn State thought they had him. Sexton, I think, was just using Satake and Penn State for leverage at BYU. He gets a big contract extension, more money going into the program, courtesy of the Crumble Cookie CEO, who is a lifelong BYU fan, which is really funny because we have folks sending Crumble Cookies to Pat Kraft, the athletic director at Penn State. There were Crumble Cookie boxes at the doorstep of the athletic facility at Penn State with Pat Kraft's name on them.
Sport on earth, and I won't hear anything different.
We had James Franklin at Virginia Tech, who had Crumble Cookies as a dessert for his staff at National Signing Day today. By the way, Virginia Tech flipped 11 Penn State recruits on Wednesday, went from a class in the 120s to now a top 25 class. Franklin's been in Blacksburg for 2 weeks. And when James Franklin comes out and says, oh, we weren't going after any school in particular, these were kids I had a relationship with. Yes, I believe you because you recruited all those kids to Penn State and got them to commit. But I also think an added bonus was you got to steal them away from your old employer.
Because, and you'll never believe this, Mike.
Yes.
It's been 2 months and Penn State still does not have a head coach.
They have no plan.
What are we doing?
It's going to have to be Terry Smith.
Just lock up Terry Smith and just, you know, 2 years, fire him and then move on. Like, do something, anything.
I believe Penn State signed 2 recruits today. And one of them was 4-star quarterback Peyton Falzone, who actually committed to Terry Smith. So if we're going to be a tea leaf reading type of outfit,
dude,
perhaps that is, you know, maybe he was told something. Also, Virginia Tech was trying really hard to flip the other Penn State signee, Jackson Ford, an edge rusher from Pennsylvania. They could not get that done. He stayed committed. And when he was asked on the CBS Sports Network this afternoon who he was speaking, he was asked by Bud Elliott, who are you speaking to at Penn State to get you to commit? He didn't really answer. He just said he's leaning on the guidance of his family. So that is not what you want to hear. And that is a big reason why Penn State signed 2 commits today. They have the 135th ranked recruiting class on 24/7.
When we log on here, Mike, to do the recap of the ACC championship game,
yep,
which I think at this point probably Sunday night, yep, probably, is Pat Kraft still the employed athletic director at Penn State?
Yes.
Minus 150? Is it like...
I wouldn't bet the house on it. That is for sure.
Yeah. This is insane levels of egg in the face, pie in the face. Like, for Penn State thinking of themselves as a top 10 job in the country, and they have been turned down by, I'm starting to lose count how many different candidates have turned them down. This is wildly embarrassing. And going back to, you fired James Franklin, I guess it was early October. I think it was October when they did that.
Yep.
You've had such a long runway. You had so much time to come up with plans and work out contingencies and all that stuff. And just now you're standing here with, you know, you're cranking your hands and the whole, like, what do we do? It's December. Figure it out.
What'd you just say they're doing?
Huh? What?
With your what and your what?
This is a certain Q word I didn't use this time. Shout out to producer Scott.
Man, that got sidetracked. The one thing I was gonna add is that Penn State fans, when James Franklin was hired at Virginia Tech, this is like my second to last thing I want to say before I go to bed. The Penn State fans were making fun of Virginia Tech for hiring James Franklin because they were so thrilled that they didn't have to deal with Franklin not winning close games anymore, which is hilarious because obviously circumstances. But they were so insistent they were going to find somebody better than Franklin and that this was not a panic move by Pat Kraft. In fact, it was a calculated move because he had seen enough. He had seen enough. And boy, oh boy, Joey, when the first coach you hear in the carousel for Penn State is Matt Rhule, and everybody has the reaction of, that's who you're hiring after firing James Franklin? That probably should have been a bat signal for all of us that this is exactly how this search was going to go. Admittedly, I cannot believe that we are in early December, going on 2 months, almost 2 months since they fired James Franklin, and they still don't have a head coach in place and have gotten multiple no's. I mean, they've gotten all these different coaches. They've gotten Kurt Cignetti an extension, Matt Rhule an extension, Jeff Brohm an extension, Brent Key an extension. That's just four coaches.
Kurt Cignetti, I think.
Did you mention him?
Wild.
Marcus Freeman, at least publicly, has not gotten an extension because he just got one after taking the Irish to the playoff last year. But like, don't be surprised if we hear one leak out at some point soon where it's like, oh yeah, Marcus Freeman, by the way, got another extension from Notre Dame. We'd all be like, okay, that was probably from Penn State.
Was Marcus Freeman ever actually going to leave Notre Dame for Penn State?
Was Kurt Cignetti ever actually going to leave? No way.
Doesn't matter. Got an extension. It's because of Penn State. So, like,
right.
With both of them, honestly. I have two things I want to say, and then I'm also ready to go to bed. So let me say this. Number one, I am having just a bear of a time coming up with who does Penn State go to next? If it's not Terry Smith, who do they go to next? And is there an option on the board that makes sense that would also potentially like validate this whole thing, where it started, and is there somewhere that they could end up that it would all make sense? And there's a name that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And it's in the ACC, Mike. Would it be just the most insane thing if Penn State were to introduce new head coach Dabo Swinney to their program?
Oh.
And number two, Section 103 just introduced a new Clemson line to their... So I want to mention that before we get out of here.
Yeah.
Section103.com, the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Clemson apparel, it turns out. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order at checkout. They've got polos. They've got t-shirts. They've got some cool, not only the proper word marks, the proper colors. They've got some, inside jokes slash, cultural things. Something about the Clemson blue cheese is a thing. Didn't know about that. There's a Howard's Rock shirt on there.
What? Yeah.
Right? I saw that. Steven's like, yeah, make sure to mention that. I was like, the what? But yeah, no, they got it. Go check it all out. Section103.com. Use promo code GOACC at checkout for 10% off your first order. That counts for Clemson. It counts for Georgia Tech. It counts for Kennesaw State, LSU, Georgia Southern, all of it. Appreciate Steven and the gang for their support. And again, congrats to them for introducing the Clemson line. That is a pretty line of shirts, polos, hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, the whole thing. And again, this Clemson blue cheese thing, somebody's got to explain that to me.
Yeah, somebody in the Clemson fan base, just Felicia's orange, somebody,
anybody, please.
Anybody. One final thing. Everybody's talking about Miami still with the college football playoff and how if BYU loses close, could Notre Dame get jumped by Miami? Outside of TV purposes, why wouldn't they have just done that already? Do we have a good answer? Okay. I'm there with you. I'm not saying it won't happen. Answer,
this committee sucks.
This committee does suck. Yeah, they suck. I mean, just the Alabama, talking about Hunter Yurecek, I'm having a stroke just thinking about it. Hunter Yurecek making the comment that Alabama's win over 5-7 Auburn, in which they ran a fake punt for a touchdown, I'm sorry, for a first down late in that game, that was enough reason to move Alabama ahead of Notre Dame, because Alabama went into a tough environment and won, even though, as Pat Forty pointed out, Kentucky, a really bad Kentucky team, went to Auburn and won earlier this year. So was it really that tough of a place to play?
And neither of us going to a bowl game, by the way.
Correct. But that, hey, we got to protect Alabama from losing so bad in the SEC title game to Georgia that they'll fall completely out of the playoffs. We got to have Alabama in. Anyway, soapbox rant over. Miami might still make the college football playoff. And if they do jump Notre Dame, even though neither team is playing a game, it'll be because this is a made-for-TV thing, which we already know. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, actual last thing on my end. This whole thing actually makes sense to me, Mike. I completely get what the committee's doing.
Oh, okay.
They just rank the teams how they want to rank them and come up with explanations later.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what they're doing. There is, I mean, the level of just wild inconsistencies week to week, the level of wild inconsistencies, like, why did you rank this team? Well, because of this. Well, why did you rank that team? Well, because of the inverse of this thing that we used to describe this other team just in the last two questions. This is a sham. Mike, this is a complete just nonsense situation. So, none of this is serious. It's not an actual playoff. It's an invitational.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll see you next year. Anyways, that's all I got. Anything else before we get out of here?
Go watch. Wrap it up.
Let's go watch the ACC championship game. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. Let's go home. By home, I mean let's go to bed.
Let's go to bed. YouTube.com/@the ACC football podcast. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell icon. We'd appreciate that. Come watch the live recap that we'll do probably Sunday night, December the, what is that, the 7th, something like that? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, 7th.
Apple, Amazon, Spotify, all those places on audio. We'd appreciate the people hitting the follow button, the subscribe, whatever you do there. Basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Anything else before we get out of here?
We'll see you guys Sunday.
You want to recap the ACC championship game?
Let's do it. Before bowl season. One last time before bowl season. We'll have playoff reaction.
You want to see if the ACC gets a team into the college football playoff?
The content will be immaculate if Duke wins this game. For non-UVA hate reasons on my part. It would just be funny. Like,
that's right. That's right. Welcome to hell. We'll talk to you then.
Yep.
Until next time, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, I'm Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again very, very soon. Until then, go ACC. And I don't know, go Hoos, go Devils, go ACC.